Welcome, everybody. This is Alex Stein, and you are listening to Mushing Radio's coverage of the 48th annual Iditarod. We are also on KVRF 89.5 in the Mat-Su Valley. RadioFreePalmer.org is our streaming site. You can find all episodes on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever it is that you get your podcast from by searching for Dog Works Radio. Follow us on social media at Dog Works Radio on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. And you can find us as well on dogworksradio.com. And that means that the Iditarod ceremonial start in Anchorage was this morning. And as always, it was very exciting. There were tons and tons of people downtown, lots and lots of snow, lots of excitement, great dog teams with Iditariders, and lots and lots of tag sleds, as we talked about yesterday. A few things that I wanted to mention that I did not mention yesterday. The first is that earlier this week, it was announced that Alaska Airlines was going to be ending its 40-year sponsorship of Iditarod. Alaska has been a very important sponsor for the Iditarod, among other things. They sponsor the Leonard Seppala Award, which is awarded for exemplary dog care. They also fly the volunteer veterinarians from outside Alaska up to Anchorage for the start of the race. They are a very big sponsor and have been a very important sponsor to Iditarod for many years. When the news of this broke earlier this week, it was reported on PETA's site that PETA had pressured Alaska Airlines into dropping their sponsorship, and PETA was claiming this as a big victory. And as longtime listeners and fans know, PETA has basically declared war on Iditarod and has been fighting to get the Iditarod canceled, basically, for decades. Alaska Airlines did confirm that they were going to drop out as a sponsor of the Iditarod, but they said that it was not, in fact, in response to PETA's pressure whatsoever, but was something that had been long planned and something that the Iditarod has known about for over a year. Alaska said that they are rethinking their charitable giving to concentrate more on their programs that specifically address community-based giving and giving that emphasizes programs dealing with the youth. So it appears that the information, or at least the spin given by PETA, was not actually what was going on. Two more things from the banquet. Jim Lanier, who we talked about a little bit last night, who is running the Iditarod at age 79, which will be he will get the new decade, so he will have had the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s, and 2020s, which is a remarkable thing. Jim Lanier said at the banquet that he wants to be known as the Musher in Black, and when he gets to Nome at the finisher's banquet, he is going to have some sort of Johnny Cash song, I assume re-lyriced to capture his experiences on the trail. So that's definitely something to look forward to in Nome. Also at the banquet, Quince Mountain of Braver Mountain Mushing, whose partner is Blair Braverman, talked about the Ugly Dogs, which are the fans and supporters of him and Blair and their kennel. And last year, we talked a little bit about how the fans launched an initiative called Iditarod, in which they raised over $100,000 in, I believe, just about a week to support school projects, especially projects in the Alaskan bush and especially native Alaskan projects. And they are going to be doing that again this year as part of Iditarod 2020. So stay tuned. We'll have more information about that when it becomes available. And you can always search on Twitter for the hashtag Iditarod. This year, we have 13 female mushers out of 57. The youngest musher is Laura Neese, who is 23. The oldest is Jim Lanier, who is 79. You have to be over 18 to run Iditarod, and sometimes we have 18 or 19-year-olds, but 23 is still relatively young. In the ceremonial start today, among other things, Lance Mackey took the turn at Cordova backwards. So Lance turned around facing to the rear as they went around that curve. And you might say that that's a showy thing to do, and that's something that really people shouldn't do, or people who aren't as skilled as Lance Mackey shouldn't do. But he did that and did not crash, did not fall. But then again, as the saying goes, Superman wears Lance Mackey pajamas. Another story that we saw last night, Pete Kaiser, who is the reigning Iditarod champ, Pete Kaiser from Bethel, his dad, as a surprise gift for his mom, bought her the Iditarider position in Pete's sled. So when it was her birthday, he revealed that he had bought her the Iditarider position. So today, Pete Kaiser, the Iditarod champion, had his mom as his Iditarider. And that is just all kinds of wonderful and very, very sweet. So the restart is tomorrow, which is the real start of the race, or the start of the competitive race, if you want to think of it that way. This year, there is a tremendous amount of snow, especially in the first part of the race. There's supposed to be an additional foot to a foot and a half of snow in the next 24 to 48 hours there. In Willow, which is where the restart is held, they got about 2.5 feet of snow in the last week or so. So as we talked about yesterday, there is a lot of snow on the Iditarod Trail. Additionally, this year is the northern route. So the restart will be in Willow, and then it will go to Yetna, Squetna, Finger Lake, Rainy Pass, Rhone, Nikolai, McGrath, Takotna, Ophir. Then it goes north to Cripple, which is technically the halfway point or the halfway checkpoint on this year's race, and then up to Ruby, Galena, Nalato, Caltag, Unalakleet, Shaktulik, Koyuk, Elon, Golovin, White Mountain, and Safety before finishing up in Nome. One of the required mandatory items that mushers have to bring with them in their sled is snowshoes. And for the past at least 10 years, most mushers have not had any occasion to use their snowshoes, but still have been required to bring them. And several mushers that I've spoken to in the past few years have said that they have literally never used their snowshoes on the Iditarod Trail. Because there is so much snow, it is anticipated that this might be the year when people are going to actually have to take out their snowshoes and use them. So there is a reason why they're required equipment. And this year, I think we're going to see people having to use their snowshoes to break trail, or when the trail is not sufficiently good, or when they have to go outside of the track from the trail of those who've gone before. Those are the cases where you really need good snowshoes, and the snowshoes will help to clomp the snow down so that the dog team can go on them. In past races, especially in very early editions of the Iditarod, people would have to go in front of their dog teams with snowshoes for sometimes many, many miles in order to break trail so that the dogs could then follow them. Additionally, because there is so much snow and so much new snow, a lot of mushers are aware of the fact that there probably are going to be many more moose on the trail and many more encounters with moose. And part of the reason for that is that the trail breakers will lay in this nice trail that's easy to travel over. And right on the side of the trail is very, very deep, unstable snow. So moose, when they're moving from place to place, will want to take the trail because that will be much easier to get around with. Now, the problem is that, of course, moose and sled dogs traditionally do not get along very well. They do not work and play well together. And as a result, there have been a lot of occasions where mushers or teams have had encounters with moose that have not gone very well for either the musher or for the dogs. And sometimes when Moose are overly excited, or when they are stressed, they will tend to kick, and they have very extremely powerful legs and can do a lot of damage with that, can actually kill dogs and can injure, severely injure, or even kill people. And as a result, a lot of mushers this year will be carrying firearms. Now, this is something that we often hesitate to get into because a lot of people have very strong reactions and opinions to the idea of guns. And I'll just say this, that it is very different to have a gun in a major city or in a suburb of a major city than it is to have a gun in the middle of the wilderness in Alaska, where there are serious threats in terms of wild animals. So before the race, when there was a musher meeting, Mark Nordman, the race marshal, asked the mushers to raise their hands if they were taking guns with them on the trail, which they are allowed to do. And the majority of the mushers indicated that they were taking guns. Ali Zirkel said that she has, I believe, a 38 caliber revolver, but she says she prefers to use flare guns to scare off moose. Aaron Burmeister is taking a 44 Magnum with him. Now, the rules call for if a musher does kill a moose or any other edible game animal, they are required to stop and gut the animal and leave it on off of the trail before they're moving on. And additionally, no other team may pass and go ahead of the musher who is doing that until the musher who killed the moose or other animal has continued in the race. And furthermore, if a musher comes upon a team that has killed an animal and the musher is dealing with it, is gutting it, subsequent teams are required to stop and must offer any assistance, if at all possible, in taking care of the gutting of the animals. Mark Nordman told the Anchorage Daily News that the trailbreakers are making a point of making more of a zigzag trail this year with pullouts. So that will give mushers a little bit of leeway and room to maneuver in case they should encounter a moose. Everywhere else, people are talking about coronavirus, and there is some talk of coronavirus as well as it relates to the Iditarod. There have so far been no diagnosed cases of coronavirus in Alaska. However, there are lots and lots of people who have come from outside, from all over the country and all over the world, to Anchorage and going up to Willow. So there is a danger, however slight, that there might be some transmission of coronavirus. Additionally, one of the things that makes coronavirus so insidious is that people can be asymptomatic, can have no visible signs of it for several days while they are still contagious and could be spreading the virus around. So in order to deal with this, the Iditarod has been in contact with the governor of Alaska and officials at the Alaska Public Health Department, and have issued advisories to volunteers, mushers, vets, and those in villages. And at this point, it is pretty much a common sense type of thing. So as you've been told everywhere else, people are being told on the Iditarod Trail, wash your hands, wash your hands, wash your hands for at least 20 seconds. Use common sense if you have some sort of respiratory infection or you have other signs that could be associated with coronavirus. Do not expose yourself to other people. Get tested if you are a fan and you think that you might be at risk of coronavirus. Do not travel to the villages and interact with people whom you could infect. Additionally, although it's not entirely clear that the coronavirus can live in dogs, there is some indication that it might be able to live in dogs and that dogs might be able to either carry this or become infected as well. So mushers have been advised that they should take extra care in monitoring their dogs, and they should be looking for symptoms of respiratory infections in their dogs and taking dog temperatures more frequently. It is theoretically possible that a dog could become infected and could then infect people. So out of an abundance of caution, people are taking these kind of measures to try to make sure that this virus doesn't spread via the Iditarod. This year, the ITC has a new CEO, Rob Urbach, who is taking over from Stan Hooley, who was there for nearly 25 years. And among other things, Rob is trying to increase the reach of the race and increase the fan base of the race. And among other things that they are doing and discussing doing much more of in the future is much greater use of drones to film competitors. And there was even a suggestion that it might be possible to have a drone following each Iditarod musher, each team. That is not going to be happening this year, but I would look for a much greater increase in the use of drones and drone footage in covering the race. We've already seen that a little bit. There was a lot of drone footage and drone pictures from the ceremonial start today that was available in places like the Anchorage Daily News and Iditarod.com and other places that are covering the race. So look for a lot more of that this year, and especially more of that in years to come. Additionally, the Iditarod has taken a page from a popular fantasy mushing game that is run by, I believe, Danny Seavey, and they are introducing their own fantasy mushing competition, and there is some betting that is being allowed on teams. So that is seen as an additional way of bringing more people in to become fans and watch the Iditarod. As I mentioned last night, I have a new series of 14 Tales from the Trail, which are original pieces of fiction and creative nonfiction about dogs, mushing, and sled dog races. The first of those, which is called Diary of a Team Dog, is out today on Saturday, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes. So please download that, listen to that, let me know what you think. I'll have one new one every day for the next 2 weeks. So it's Saturday night. The restart is tomorrow at 2 p.m. Alaska time. And traditionally, Saturday afternoon and Saturday evening are quiet times for Iditarod. The mushers and their teams and their handlers and everyone is getting all of their last-minute preparations set so that they can go up to Willow tomorrow. There are a lot of people who are in town who are either fans or volunteers who come up frequently, who are having celebratory dinners at various places around Anchorage. And it's usually a relatively quiet time. People tend to want to get up early to get out to Willow. There is limited parking available in Willow, so it's highly recommended that you take one of the shuttle buses that goes from Anchorage. They leave from the lakefront. You can also park in either Wasilla or Houston, and there are shuttles that go from there up to the Willow Community Center, which is where the restart is on Willow Lake. The buses are very inexpensive, especially the buses from Wasilla or Houston. So I would recommend highly that if you are up in Alaska and you want to go to the restart, that you don't drive your own car there, but instead take advantage of the buses and the shuttle operations that are going on. In Willow, there always are people who have bonfires and picnics in the three lakes, the first three lakes on the trail. There's a tremendous crowd of people right at the restart and going across Willow Lake. It is really fun. It is really exciting. There's an opportunity to get really great pictures. There's a small downhill slope when you're coming into the second river, and a lot of photographers camp out there to try to get pictures of mushers coming over and down onto the second lake. And those are always very exciting. This is also going to be the last time that the mushers are around huge crowds until they get to Nome. There will be crowds at some of the checkpoints, and some of the checkpoints that are bigger than others, the ones that have air service like McGrath and Unalakleet, tend to have bigger crowds around them. But we're talking about a few dozen to a few hundred people, as opposed to several thousand people in Willow and more than 10,000 people in Anchorage. So after tomorrow, teams go out on the trail and then they are really on their own. Additionally, the musher is not allowed to receive any outside assistance once the race has the restart in Willow. So tonight, and when they're getting ready to start tomorrow, handlers and friends and supporters can offer any kind of help they want. But once they pass the starting line, it's the musher and his or her dogs. So I am looking forward to a very, very exciting race. As I said yesterday, I think it's going to be a slower race, and that the increased snow is going to bring about some additional challenges that we haven't seen in the past few years, where there's been relatively low snowfall. So we'll talk about that more tomorrow. I believe tomorrow Robert Forto is going to be back with me. I will be co-hosting and he will be hosting again, as it should be, as when all is right with the world. And we will, I believe, give our predictions for who is going to win and who's going to be in the top five tomorrow. Until then, I am available most all the time on Twitter at Coldfoot Films. Robert is at Robert Forto. We always love hearing from you guys. So if there are things that we've gotten wrong, if there are things you have questions about, if there are things that you just would like us to talk about more, please hit either of us up and we're happy to do that. And I know that I am going to get a lot of sleep, because there's not going to be too much sleep for the next 2 weeks, because we are going Iditarod-ing. It's going to be really cool. It's going to be really exciting. I hope you'll come along with us. And until tomorrow, goodbye.